Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Welding instructor Alex DeClaire knows VR training platforms like ForgeFX help students master their skills.
There's a big learning curve with welding. Virtual reality simulates that exact muscle memory that they need.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! Just
stay next! Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Boys, have you ever wandered through a craft store, a Michaels, if you will, maybe some sort of Hobby Lobby, and you've seen a nice little wooden, little piece of wood you hang up, and it says something like, too blessed to be stressed? Anybody familiar with this?
That doesn't describe you, does it?
It's the words on the wall genre, very popular in the American Southeast, although I have been told maybe even more so popular in the American Midwest. Really, you know, your mileage may vary depending on where you're from and where you live. In true words on the wall fashion, it is false. You can be entirely blessed, as we all are, at Split Zone Duo. By the way, at Split Zone Duo on all your social media apparatuses. Thank you very much. My name is Stephen Godfrey. That's Alex Kirshner. That's Richard Johnson. We are very blessed in so many ways as we kind of end this calendar year, as we're about to go on a little bit of like a holiday, a little bit of a break, and then come back around and do playoff stuff. But it is extremely stressful. And before we recorded this show, we were discussing the sort of insane logjam that the ungoverned college football apparatus has put itself in. So in that spirit, boys, normally we have a much more structured, itemized, calendar-specific show. This is what we call the big show. It usually reflects either the week that was or the week that's about to be, maybe a little bit of both, right? Things are a total mess. However, Alex made a very good point before we went on. Before we try and tap into just how goofy things are with the portal and the signing day and the I'm doing like a Cosby thing here, sorry, I didn't mean to, and the expanded playoff next year, Alex, we did have real live human football of the championship variety. So very quickly, let's address the actual football games that occurred before we get into the just suffocating amount of off-field nonsense.
Yeah, let's do it. Celebration Bowl, Black College Football National Championship. I watched this game and I thought that it was a tremendous college football game because it was well played and it was also a mess. And in that way that we enjoy this sport that is distinct and different than the NFL, the Celebration Bowl very much lived up to that. The final is FAMU 30, Howard 26. For FAMU, it's their first Black national title since 2001, though they claim one for 2019 as well, dubiously, in my opinion, given that the Celebration Bowl has sort of been established as the way that it's picked, and they were not in that game that year. This was a funny game, though. I saw something that I've never seen before, ever, in football, in which I was remarking to people I don't even think Mario Cristobal has probably ever done, which is that FAMU is winning this game in the fourth quarter. They essentially give it away on a pick six, like a screen, a throw behind the line that gets taken the other way by Howard. Howard goes up 1 point with like 6 minutes left in the game. And then for reasons I still haven't figured out why, Larry Scott, the Howard head coach, just kicks a PAT to go up by exactly 2 points with 6 minutes left in the game. I was beside myself. I couldn't believe what I had seen. Fortunately, that 1 point difference was not what cost Howard the Celebration Bowl. FAMU comes down, scores a touchdown, wins it that way. Very impressive performance, I thought, by Jeremy Musa, the quarterback for FAMU, who's been around. He's transferred. He was at Vanderbilt most recently, was the SWAC player of the year. And Richard, this will be relevant to your interests. I think probably as like an NFL camp guy, at least, who is an interesting developmental look for a team. Pretty big, looks the part, throws the ball hard. His receivers spent most of this day like not making a play for him, but then they finally started catching the ball. So for FAMU, extremely exciting. Back to the mountaintop, place they used to be in the 60s and 70s all the time. And then it kind of ebbed and flowed for a very long time. happy for them. Kamala Harris was there, Vice President of the United States.
FAMU, yeah, Kamala Harris went to Howard. FAMU, I think, is interesting because the way Willie Simmons just works, he is obviously a former college quarterback. He wears like hoodies, and their brand is like shotgun. Like, it's shotgun. They're going to throw the ball. Like, that's what they do. That Larry Scott score decision was, boy, that was really fascinating. Because obviously then Howard could have been down just three had they have gone for the 2-point conversion.
Could have been
but
up
three.
Up three. Yeah, and forced FAMU
Yes, but up three. But what I mean is they then would have been down three. Like, they lost the game by four. You see what I'm saying? Math.
Yes.
Math.
Yes. All kinds of things that they could have done with that extra point had they gone and tried to get it.
The point here to me is that this is a FAMU team and program that has stuck with this guy, Willie Simmons. Yes, perhaps he's had looks other places. Not perhaps, he has had looks at other places, but he stayed here and built this thing into a Black National Champion. And that is noteworthy. It deserves plaudits. It deserves praise. And I think for me, there is an interesting, and this is a podcast for another day, but the interesting notion of, when you get into the dichotomy between HBCUs, you have Howard in its Howardness, which, again, podcast for another day, but Kamala Harris went to Howard and was in the audience, which should tell you a little bit about Howard if you are unaware with the HBCU universe. And FAMU, which is sort of one of the classic football powers of HBCU football. So it was an interesting styles make fights clash. It was an interesting culture clash in that game. And the game ended up, like you said, being great. Howard stormed out of that lead. FAMU brought it back and made for a great ending.
Yeah, FAMU is a football school. And Howard is not that. That's not Howard's institutional identity. And people who have played there, have coached there, would probably tell you that. I've been in the Howard football offices. They are, you know, like classrooms. They're not... Howard's institutional priority is not to be a football factory, and in the way that I think it is to a greater extent at FAMU. And so, you know, the fact that they were not only in this game but hung in this game and almost won it is a really significant achievement. But obviously, they don't give out the almost national championship, so probably be pretty cold comfort to Bison fans this week. Steven, did you happen to watch the Division II national title game between Harding and Colorado School of Mines?
Only pieces. Most of my time was spent with Montana, North Dakota State. I'm trying to remember the Saturday that was. The early part of Boise, UCLA. The morning shift was taken up by watching Georgia Southern just absolutely mediocre themselves to death. So I did see pieces of beloved Harding, beloved triple option, though.
Maybe Georgia Southern, really quick, 15, 30 seconds on this. That was so bad, getting just boat raced by an Ohio team whose entire offense was in the portal, more or less, that the thought crossed my mind. Remember when Houston fired Major Applewhite because they got their asses kicked by Army so bad in that bowl game in like 2018? The thought crossed my mind. Maybe that's called for here. I don't know.
Oh, when you get your ass waxed in a bowl game?
No. But they lost their last four, I think, in the regular season. They got their asses waxed by App State, too.
Yes.
I don't feel very good about that arc.
And they open, Alex, they open with Boise. And so I had several people in the single wing ask me, like, what happens when they've lost six in a row? And, like, all anyone in the administration is talking about is, like, oh, we got USC's head coach. It's not good. It's a rare moment where these bowls, like, matter in a hyper-local way. Because for Georgia Southern, who I think was, like, favored by 2.5, and I don't really care about the Vegas line, but that just gives you an indication of where really smart people thought this was going to go. To just sort of fart it out to end a bad season otherwise, I think there's something to be said in these bowls that don't matter at all, low-end bowls that are exhibitions. If you are coming off of a losing streak and you're still bowl eligible, I think it's a good idea to try and win that bowl game for that sort of little instant psychological dopamine hit for your fan base to carry into the offseason, because it's going to be the last time to see you play football for 9-10 months.
Yeah, it was ugly for Georgia Southern. on the Division II game, and, you know, hey, Georgia Southern gave up the flex bone. Here's a team that absolutely has not given up the flex bone or the triple option. Georgia Southern would tell you they did different things over the years. Harding destroyed Colorado Mines in this game, absolutely destroyed them. The final was 38-7. They became the first team in the history of college football at any level, or at least NCAA football at any level, to clear 6,000 yards on the ground over the course of a season, undefeated year. I mean, they just football teamed these guys. Like, they were, if you want to reject modernity and embrace tradition, the way that Harding went about this was kind of soothing to watch. It was just it really got away from Mines in like the second quarter. It was a close game for a while at the beginning, and then Harding just kind of battering rammed these guys to death, and it was in its schematic way, it was kind of glorious. So that was the first national championship for Harding. And also, Colorado Mines kind of remains at the altar, unable to get over the top.
The best game of the day by far, because I tuned in, I think, like 7 minutes into the other FCS semifinal on Friday night, which was South Dakota State and Albany, and that got out of hand.
That went the way we thought that it was going to go.
God bless some college football, like, drawing more interest in the Northeast Corridor, which is something we've talked about, because I want this to be as universal and national a sport as possible. But eek, South Dakota State did it, and they did it effectively and almost instantly. However, maybe one of the games of the year, North Dakota State, Montana. Montana winning just in an absolute thrilling fashion. Bobby Hawk, by the way. Some of you listening, some of you watching might remember, like, Bobby Hawk, butt of a joke, bad UNLV coach at the FBS level.
So UNLV like coach.
Shout out Barry Odom, I guess.
Yeah.
cast aside, and just thought of as, it's funny because we lose context so often on coaches where it's like, oh, bad two seasons, he forgot how to coach, he dumb, he bad. And I'm not a big fan of retreads. Because I do think, actually, I just did a thing for the Washington Post about how, like, we're going to default to dumb, bad, and, like, problematic retreads in coaching just because we don't know what the future is going to be and everyone's scared and athletic directors aren't nearly as smart as they want to let you think they are. But a guy who fits in another place, like Hawk, like, he goes back to FCS and turns Montana around and puncher's chance against South Dakota State, like, you know, broke up the Dakota monotony. I do have one quick note, because last week I had a lot of Bison fans sort of like jump on me, and I think it was just misunderstood on both sides. Guys, we talked last week about Matt Inns leaving North Dakota State to join USC's staff, how that was announced so far before he was actually going to leave, because they could have, I mean, they almost won this game, which would have set up a January national title game. So you'd have like a month and change of knowing that your coach is leaving. And what I said was, where does this ever happen? This feels so unprecedented. North Dakota State fans were quick to remind us, like, Craig Bohl did this. Basically had a window of time where it's like, we're going into the playoffs, but I'm going to be Wyoming's head coach. The reason why, obviously, is the FBS hiring cycle is different than the FCS postseason structure. Obviously, Chris Klieman leaves North Dakota State to go to Kansas State as head coach. Same thing. I knew in my head when I said it that it had happened before, but with the combination of like a sort of lackluster by comparison North Dakota State season, and then also, and maybe I should have clarified what I meant, I guess what I meant to convey is not that a guy is saying like, hey, this is it. Because I've talked to coaches and players and locker, like guys who have lived in locker rooms before, and like, there's a modern acceptance. And I think, Richard, like, if you ask modern young athletes, like, hey, my coach is moving on, it's the best thing for him and his family, I get that. Like, now that players have more agency, I think they respect that even more, right? But the dude is leaving for a linebacker's coach job, right? Like, he's not leaving to be the head coach at USC. He's not leaving to replace Craig Bohl at Wyoming. Like, this dude, Alex, left essentially to like take a position job. And that was what I thought was so weird, that he was going to say, hey guys, everyone in this locker room, I've asked so much of you, like, you've worked your asses off this year, I'm going to go leave for like a much smaller job at a much bigger school, which is just so much more career minded than it is like, I'm going to go lead other young men. I could be way off here. And, well, I'm very interested to see like assistants or former players tell me like, oh, we don't actually give a shit, there's no distinction. But that's what struck me as so odd.
This is informed speculation. And it's not me knowing Matt Entz's psychology firsthand, But he, at some point, that's a guy who it makes sense to reset your clock before you're going to get fired from a job. Like, I'm not saying – I don't know that he was in imminent danger at North Dakota State, but the bar there is ridiculously high. And he's a national championship head coach himself, but they are no longer the dynasty. They've been not only supplanted, but supplanted by their biggest rival as the team of the moment and the defending champ in FCS. It makes some sense that if you think you want to advance your career to go and be in the Big Ten and be at USC, be in a place where even though you're not the defensive coordinator because they hired UCLA's guy, that if that defense gets better, forgive me if I made a mistake there. You can correct me.
No. You said Big Ten, and I was like, no, he's going to USC. Oh,
yeah, good point.
Sorry, it's just it's never not going to be weird.
And if it winds up being the case that USC's defense is even a little better next year, maybe get a little bit of credit for that. So it makes a bit of sense that he decided to make that move. I will say that.
I mean, from a coaching standpoint, I get it, right? And it's a great – talking about diversification of a resume.
Yeah, it's significant diversification.
I totally get that.
On the end of this game itself, because I don't want to stray too far from it.
It was awesome.
Junior Bergen, this receiver from Montana, sort of one of the most entertaining quarters and change that you'll ever see a football player partake in. It was this wide out from Montana. He has a 47-yard punt return to put them about a touchdown up. I think it might have been 8 points up or so. It might have been 7 points up. Anyway, it's basically a tie game where they're up by one. He runs this punt back, one of those horizontal, winding, like Billy Cannon-looking punt returns that just kind of takes the entire horizontal length of the field, just gets inside the left pylon. Very exciting. He catches a touchdown pass from basically the entire overtime playing field out, like a 22-yarder in the first overtime. When they needed to answer after Cole Payton ran in from 25 on the first play of North Dakota State's possession. And then he wide receiver pass backs it on the 2-point conversion in the second overtime when you have to go for it for Montana. So he had a punt return touchdown, a receiving touchdown, and a throwing 2-pointer in like 12 minutes of clock time, you know, plus overtime. And obviously, North Dakota State also tried to get a little tricky-dicky on its 2-pointer with the game on the line with a swinging gate-looking contraption, and it just wasn't there. So congratulations to Montana.
This was like, remember when we all used to crowd around the young days of social media and get excited about a MAC game in November? That's what this felt like in terms of talent level. Like, no, obviously there was no, it's an FCS game. It's cold outside, but it was so evenly matched and entertaining. And there were clear stakes. Obviously it's a playoff bracket, but you had environment, you had narrative, like it all felt like really good football to watch, which is just something I feel like we haven't said about a lot of the product on the stretch this year with everything else that's going on the field. And so, when we do stump for like the FCS on this show, it's for games like this that live up to the billing. Because like, I'm going to be honest, Alex, like it's been really chalky otherwise with Dakota's just like, it's not really compelling football when they just grind people out. I saw it happen in person this year against Eastern Washington. Like they'll just smoke you. This was fun. This had dramatic energy to it. By the way, oh, shout out Roger Sherman on social media. Roger's on his road trip this year across college football. Runs into Hawk and the coach is like celebrating in a local bar. I feel like that's a very basketball coach thing to do.
Earlier this year, but yes, Bobby.
Did he reheat it?
I think he reheated it. I think he said that this was after the Montana State game. I think Bobby Hawk does this every like couple years, like maybe after they beat Montana State, he'll go out on the town.
It's such a pro move. It's such a good vibes move. I mean, you know, unless you don't drink or something like that. But it's just good energy all the way around. All right.
Couple more quickly. We want to make sure we get to these as well. The Division III title game. This was on Friday night, the Stag Bowl. Cortland from New York beats North Central from Illinois. 2-point conversion to jump ahead. And then they seal it with a defensive stop, 38-37. First time for the Red Dragons. This was fun too. They traded touchdowns in the last 2 minutes of the game. And whoever scored last in this case was Cortland. And Cortland wins its first Division III national title. Also, a couple of people pointed this out. We hadn't given any pub to the NAIA championship race this year. Kaiser in Florida beats Northwestern from Iowa. You will note that Iowa in NAIA and also to some extent JUCO football terms, but especially NAIA, is a really big time destination for that level of football. Northwestern was on a 27 game winning streak and has that snapped here by the team from Florida. Congrats to Kaiser on winning the NAIA national title. But Godfrey, as you have wanted to talk through in this show, it is funny that we've got these championship races happening at the same time as we've got other things happening in this chaotic sport of ours.
At least the low end is organized. Like, at least they did not set out to do this with knowing what the future of the FBS would be, but isn't it nice that there's just a understandable, reasonable structure to, like, the lower division football where it's like, all right, hey guys, it's we can change before Christmas. Let's just go ahead and put a bow on this bad boy. Give us, you know, create a champion and we're going to move on. Okay. In the interest of pulling the curtain back a little bit on the show, this week is nonsensical. It's not a negative statement. It's not a positive statement. It is just simply the end product of, facts, as my younger co-hosts are wont to say. How we got here is maybe not the topic for today, because I think the shortest answer is no one was in charge and stuff mashed into each other. It is fun to point out, and this is a question I posed with several people that I was just communicating with these last couple of days. So I feel like you start the week, as we record this, by the way, it's early National Signing Day as we record this. Most of that is pretty static in terms of, like, I know there will be some flippage, but it's not quite like it used to be. We have a level of certainty, you would say, right, to this early national signing period. So I could be wrong. We could have some skyrocketing team from the low 20s that jumps into the top five today. I sincerely doubt it, boys. By the way, I'm filibustering through this. Is that possible?
That's fine. The thing that we don't have total clarity on is the portal stuff, because hell, we're not going to have total clarity on the portal stuff until toe meets leather Labor Day weekend next year, if we want to be really honest about it.
Real fast though, like, the portal classes are still not locked, and it's also it's early National Signing Day. So we started the week with schools like, mainly Ole Miss, obviously Colorado and Dion sort of in perpetuity in the headline, making sense. Almost a separate signing class, essentially, right? So you've had schools with attrition issues for weeks as coaches have left, because that's how the portal works, right? To pull something out, you got to put something in. We have schools that are clearly benefiting, manipulating, you can call it working the system, whatever. Then you have traditional high school recruiting. Now you still have bowls, which, you know, depends on your mileage, depends on your circumstance, what the value prop is there for the individual teams and bowls. In about a week, you're going to have, like, honest to goodness, preparation for playoff games. Okay. We just obviously had a coaching carousel. So some of these staffs, as we've known, like, that's not new, where a coach is hired and then, like, 5 seconds later, he has to put together a recruiting class. It's always been kind of stupid. Now all of it's going to come together, because what I was talking to someone about the portal flipping stuff and Ole Miss and Colorado and all this, and they were like, well, how's Lane going to do this if what he's doing now is successful? Meaning, you know, he's so very, very clearly all in on, like, and Richard and I have heard weird numbers. I don't want to repeat them yet because confirmation's hard, but, like, Ole Miss was very heavy in the portal, right? We'll just leave it at that. They were also very heavy in NIL in retaining a ton. Yes, Alex.
I'm just throwing money.
I like the first motion was like, give it to me. And then the second one was like, take it.
I thought he was trying to trigger one
combination
of those.
Of one of retaining a bunch.
I thought he was trying to trigger one of those, like, one of those
emoji things. Yeah. Yeah. I think hopefully minor turnoff. So you saw offensive core retained, right? Dart, the quarterback, Harris, Quinson Judkins. All right. That's money. Then they go out and they land almost everybody in the portal of note, right? That's money. They refurbish the defense completely via, like, mainly the portal. This is all to make the playoff, right? Because this team still might not be a top two or top three roster fully when we get to in the SEC next year.
It won't be. It's Ole Miss, but it's 12-team playoff.
There we go. So here, this is where I'm going, boys. And this is the confusion of this week, because, like, we sat out to try and figure out how best to encapsulate this week. and we'll preview the Bulls at the end of the show. This team that's doing all this crazy 40 hours in a day work, they would be in the first round right now. They would be having to prep to play a game at like Ohio State or something if this year's standings were applied. And those are some of the projections that I saw where they'd probably be on, they'd almost certainly be on the road. They'd be in the first round. Guys, NIL's good, portal's good, all that. It's all good, it's all fine, but like, y'all, we got a problem here.
So a couple things, and this is not to like, I don't feel like rehashing last week, because what you're saying is what we were talking about last week. The point is well taken, and the point still applies, and it probably more applies this week, even perhaps, than it did last week, because of this week's projections into next year and what this week is, because it's actually officially a signing day, or the signing period, if you want to say, right now. So
yeah,
you're going to have some of this is how do you know how good this Ole Miss roster is actually going to be? Some of this is the difficulty in projecting a portaled unit, a portaled roster, and as far as Ole Miss is concerned, a portaled basically side of the ball. Most of their portal guys right now in are defensive players. Ole Miss has the second ranked portal class. Walter Nolan's not even in it yet, technically. If he gets in it, I'm pretty sure it would automatically bring this to the top, and we're going to have a significant conversation about Ole Miss, which was, in my opinion, better on the defensive front this season even than it was last season. And with Walter Nolan, potentially gets even better. To me, what this says is this is the powers that be at Ole Miss sitting down with Lane and saying, buddy, you complained about it, you whined about it, you said we needed more of it, here it is, you have it. Because this is a roster that does not have excuses, or will not have excuses. I'm not talking about national championship. This is not a roster that's going to have an excuse to not be a top 15 team, probably, when all is said and done, which means fighting for that playoff spot, those last couple at-large playoff spots, when we're in this spot next year with what they're building. I mean, you can tell. This is sort of like when you've got a quarterback in the NFL that you don't really know about, Justin Fields, you don't really know about, and you're like, all right, well, let's surround him with as much as we can, give him no excuses, and figure out if he's really in or out. That's sort of what I think is happening with Lane Godfrey. We have talked about on this show multiple times the level of fed upness with the powers that be at Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin in the antics, so to speak, regarding other jobs and the batting of the eyes.
Sort of his own version of the Harbaugh thing.
This is, to me, buddy, you wanted it, now you got it. This is your roster that's probably as good as money can buy portal wise or getting there. You know, I don't know. I literally do not know what I'm about to say. I don't know if they're going to land an Evan Stewart coming home here. Like, I don't know. And we'll get to A&M in a second here, but what this is stacking up to be is a win now, you better win now team heading into 2024.
You know, I've been aware that the playoff is moving to 12 teams and that's going to be a different world. And we've talked about, like James Franklin, Penn State, so happy a 12-team playoff is coming. Or Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame, really need a 12-team playoff. That's going to be great for you. I think what you just said, Richard, that Ole Miss doesn't have an excuse not to be right there for the playoff, is the real like light bulb off in my head moment that this is a different world. Like, I mean, you haven't been able to say that Ole Miss needs to be contending for anything literally since before the sport integrated. That is, in fact, the exact line of demarcation the last time Ole Miss was nationally relevant, the specific line of demarcation.
Why?
It's a great question. But I can't disagree. Ole Miss playing the national championship tournament next year or bust. New world that we live in.
I'm still stuck on the idea of like, how are you going to do this and then also get ready for a game next year? Because, you know, portals are rentals by and large. And like, if you want to maintain it, it's not like the expectation will lessen even if, let's just say they get the 10 seed next year or something, right? The expectation is still that you need to go out and maintain this machine. So that means working the portal again next year. Also, their recruiting is like fine by description, sort of like for level of expectation that we're used to for teams at this caliber. probably not as good. I'm looking at a situation like Auburn, where Freeze is doing exactly what we said he would, which is like, he's going to high school recruit his ass off. Like, this is a team that lost to New Mexico State a week before Thanksgiving, and they're going to land, like, as we record this, probably a top 10 signing class. But then Freeze gets up here this week, and this was the lead in my column, because I, believe me, I know when that man is lying, and I know when he's not. And he was totally honest and transparent in a way that I thought was really interesting, where he's like, I don't know how to do this. Like, we essentially just didn't work the portal. Now, you guys just said it's a win-now mode at Ole Miss. You can't tell me it's not a win-now mode at Auburn, right? So No. It just seems, it all seems like, regardless of circumstance or situation, completely unmanageable until we pull these events apart.
I think
it's just that simple.
I think you might be underestimating something, Stephen. But Richard, I'm curious for your thought on this.
Auburn's patience?
No,
please tell me that's Auburn's patience.
That's a hard thing to get wrong.
I was like, holy shit, we're going into a completely uncharted topic.
The logistics of the future being in a 12-team playoff during the early signing period, if the schedule doesn't change, yeah, the logistics are a pain in the ass, but it kind of helps your recruiting to be like, hey, Chucky. I don't know why that's the 18-year-old's name that I just came up
with
the first time.
I like it. Go with it. Very common name.
Hey, Chucky. Sorry, I can't be, you know, in the war room all day. I might not have as much time on the phone with you the day or two before signing day because I'm getting ready to play for a national championship. You want to come and play for Ships? Come and play for me. Like, I think the schools that have this problem may not have this problem so much because they are also, you know, getting the benefit that you get from being in the tournament in the first place. I'd rather be busy than not be busy. Like, if you have too much time that time of year, that's not good. It doesn't say anything good about where you are.
I think we're pushing towards the increasing, like, insanely fast rising value of the program's player personnel director. Because the other thing Freeze mentioned, again, in such a weird, honest, and factual moment for Hugh Freeze, was he didn't say this directly, but you could tell by the way that he was describing high school signing classes, which is happening right now on December 20th. You know, you used to be able to sign the 22 or the 24, or do you guys remember oversigning? Do you guys remember when that happened?
The good old days, the gray shirt days.
But, like, you had a number. Right. And you knew what the number would be in a much more consistent way. And what Freeze is like visibly anxious about is that you never really know the number. And I think I think the situation is in the heads of elite recruiters right now where they don't have a best practices guide. And that someone asked me on the single wing, like, what are you most looking forward to? I kind of think it's the uncertainty. It's like, we got a lot of really smart people and really talented people. And, like, I include Freeze in that because he's a hell of a recruiter. But they don't really know what the best way to do this is yet.
Godfrey, your point is really well taken because I think yes, this is free agency, obviously. But where this free agency is different than in the NFL is in the NFL, if you go nuts in one free agency, you don't do it in the next free agency. Like,
correct.
You don't then do it. Like, you spent all your cap, and your cap, for the most part, is then locked up for like a two
unless
or three year, you know, Super Bowl window, unless you're the Saints. Unless you're the Saints. That's the difference here. Here, he's going to do this year, and then he's going to need to do it again next year, and then he's going to need to do it again next. Like, if you don't high school recruit well enough, or you don't plan to, you don't want to, or you miss, or guys leave, or what have you, you have to dip as deep into the transfer portal again and again and again. And that's where you start to get into some people's, you know, issues about portal culture and what that does to the culture of your locker room and the slide and yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. So I think,
Richard, what if five or six guys from this class next, let's just say that I really am not trying to like do an Auburn bit here, but like, the dude signs a class and there's a schematic issue or there's something, five or six guys leave within 2 years, which seems likely now, right? Like, how do we, I don't know. It's like, do we reevaluate these classes in hindsight? And then how are you not having to balance the time in the portal with high school recruiting? Like, you have to, right?
You have to, Godfrey, because now let's talk about Texas A&M. Texas A&M signed the best recruiting class ever by rating. Couple years ago, We have, and we just talked about a couple of their players. Guys, Brandon Marcello from 247 Sports actually tweeted this last night. They've lost a third of that recruiting class. A third of it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
Walter Nolan is in the portal. Evan Stewart is in the portal. LT Overton's at Alabama. Chris Marshall got kicked out of school, which happens. And then on and on and on. And like, so we have an opinion about Mike Elko and his prowess as a football coach. I do, at least.
I do. Yeah. I think we're all of like mind.
He's coming into.
He's good.
Part of why.
Yeah. FFC.
Part of why I was, in the end, pretty jazzed about the hire and pretty jazzed about the FFC nature of whoever they were going to hire, him or Mark Stoops, when it got down to it, was because I was like, oh, well, you're coming into a roster that's pretty well stocked and that's got pretty decent reserves, particularly from the high school level. Well, then Mike Elko is not able to retain Elijah Robinson, who was the interim head coach and who I was told was the key coach on that roster in keeping this class together and keeping this roster together, at least its best players. Elijah Robinson goes to Syracuse to go with Fran Brown and help run the show there. And now you've got all these defections. And again, these are defections of good players. Evan Stewart is a very good football player. And so how this is going to work now is A&M's got its own sort of existential, you know, pressure or stress or what have you about in a very like A&M was at the forefront of cash, NIL. Then everybody caught up to him. So you NIL'd your roster. All right. You relied on NIL very strongly. All right. You, Jimbo, at least specifically, did not cultivate and did not work on to a, you know, good extent, relationships with high school coaches in the state, which we know in the state of Texas is very, very key. He's now gone. Enter in Mike Elko. I know Mike Elko shouted out the Texas High School Coaches Association in his introductory press conference. So on one hand, okay, they're probably working on that. But on the other hand, the NIL piece, you've been caught, baby. Everybody else is now playing the game. If Ole Miss is about to run out here with this roster that is a lot, you've been caught. And now Texas and Oklahoma are coming into the league. And now you want to talk existential. You ran away from this Texas team 10 years ago to be the big you-know-what in a big league. And now Texas has joined you back up. And for all we know, Texas may come into this league with a national championship in a few weeks. Have fun with that. So I think the A&M thing is fascinating as you talk about how this roster is turning over and this inflection point with A&M where they are in some danger here of sliding, I don't know if sliding back to what they've always been is what, or staying at what they've always been, which is insert your 8-win joke if you're a Texas fan or a Big 12 person. So I think that the dichotomy there in the SEC West, well, the artist formerly known as the SEC West, when you talk about Auburn, you talk about Ole Miss, you talk about A&M, is fascinating.
Yeah, I want to do two NIL danger zone and happy zones because you bring up A&M, which danger zone, you've convinced me. You've been following, anyone been following the stories at USC the last couple of days?
Mm-hmm.
Which, pick one, which one?
Right.
Yeah.
I think that the USC Trojans are in a collective NIL, if you want to call it that, danger zone themselves. I don't think the tell is that Malachi Nelson went into the transfer portal. He was the latest five-star quarterback for Lincoln Riley. When he came, the idea was heir apparent to Caleb Williams, a future Heisman winner or finalist, like every Lincoln Riley quarterback is at some point or another. You get the idea. He's in the portal now. My impression of that, just from asking around about it, is that it is not quite a they dumped him, but it is also not quite a he's leaving them because he's got better options either. And I think that that is a common theme right now with USC, which is seeing a bunch of guys who had a lot of stars next to their names when they were recruited out of high school going into the portal. And the idea from USC people is, well, these guys aren't even that good. You know, Malachi Nelson may not even be what he was thought to be just a year ago when he came to school there. But that's its own problem. That means you're misevaluating or you're misdeveloping. And I think USC has another problem, which is that, yeah, there's a bunch of rich people in LA and a bunch of rich USC fans, but they are not, by any stretch of the imagination, they are not a collective powerhouse. Yeah, like
you gotta put the money in the system, bro.
So I am like a little worried for USC. I at first I thought, oh, they're just dumping this guy Malachi Nelson, but then I saw that the one of the rumored quarterbacks who Lincoln Riley might want to replace him is Will Howard from Kansas State, who is a fine player, but not really the Lincoln Riley quarterback caliber.
Well, I would.
But he might just do – I'm curious for your thought on it. He might be cool because he might just do what he's told as opposed to freelancing. And Lincoln might like that after 2 years of Caleb Williams.
That's pretty much – like that's pretty much what I was going to say. Pretty much like
– Will Howard, rule follower.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's
– No, I just like – I like it in the On3 database where it'll say like dual threat, pro style, rule follower.
Like, yeah, like this is the route. Throw it there. Ball goes there. Yeah. And you know, look, man,
obedient
between Spencer Rattler and Caleb Williams, it's been a minute since Lincoln Riley's been able to kind of have that. You know, Baker, Kyler, etc. The USC thing is fascinating, and I don't. It's Wednesday morning. It's 11 o'clock Eastern. Florida signing class is not done yet. And DJ Lagway, their prize quarterback, will not sign until 3:30 Central Time, so 4:30 Eastern Time, which is roughly right around Billy Napier's press conference.
RJ,
I wonder why.
Is that the guy who was asleep this morning? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Ooh. What are you talking about?
Right before we got on, one of like the 247 guys were like, so-and-so is not going to sign yet because he's not awake. And I was like, God, I love signing.
Oh, no, I hadn't seen that. I know.
Somebody just bailed on an early announcement. They're like, yeah, he didn't wake up. And I was like, God, they are all 17.
No, Lagway. So Lagway okay. is Lagway's not signing until 3:30 Central Time, 4:30 Eastern. And Billy Napier's press conference will not be until roughly around then. Last year, there was a thing regarding putting Billy up there without Jaden Rashada's letter being in. And we all know how that one ended. Perfectly, and Jaden Rashada will start for the Gators next Saturday against whoever in the college football playoff. So I say all that to say USC is one of the schools who I mentioned last week poking at DJ Lagway. I don't think they will get him. I do think he will end up signing at Florida when all is said and done. This will be dated in 5 hours. If that doesn't happen, it is what it is. But I say that to say perhaps they are not done, USC, at the quarterback position. And I don't think that means they'll be done. Or I do think that means they're probably done portal-wise because they've got Will Howard in, and Will Howard's probably your rental and your stopgap. But what they're doing at the quarterback position, the work is not done there. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how they close this out.
Not worried about NIL-wise. The Oregon Ducks. In general, I disregard a lot of big conclusions that people make about how schools are faring in the paying for players market because there's just so much bluster. And we've already talked on the show many times about how there's no way to verify a lot of these deals. And you should just assume that people are lying. So all you got to do is look at who comes and who goes. Who goes for Oregon so far in the portal period? Nobody they care about. I was diligent. I went through, I looked through their roster. Unfortunately, there is not a button on 247 or on 3 or whatever that just says this guy's good or this guy's bad. But Elliot, we need you to put that button on 247, and I want you, bud, to be the guy.
About to say the same thing, Alex. They need to build that feature into the table of like just one of these or one of these.
Yeah. On the portal,
I went through the snap counts though. On the portal, especially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Almost exclusively.
I went through the snap counts. Oregon's fine with the guys who are rolling out. They're completely fine. And who's come? Dylan Gabriel has come. Good player. He's not. I'm not Godfrey doing my third school thing with him. He can play. He can keep playing college football. And Dante Moore.
Oh, okay.
Because he's good. And
Dante Moore
from UCLA.
He speaks for 33% of splits on Doyle, I'll say. Please continue.
He's good enough.
Hank
Bo Nix get a Heisman nom.
Hank Bachmeier deserves money from the government after spending that much time at Louisiana Tech. Okay?
Okay, fair enough. They also get Matt Bedford, the Indiana guard who was going to go with Deion and isn't, and was one of the best linemen in the Big Ten last year. I don't know anything about you know, when you see a ranking like the 10 most aggressive NIL collectives that are really making waves right now, I've seen those rankings. I don't know anything about that. I don't believe that. I don't think that that's a serious way to evaluate anything in this business because there's so little that is actually for public consumption. But you look who comes to Oregon, who leaves Oregon, the Oregon Ducks are splashing cash and they're doing it very effectively. Well done.
Oregon.
Richard, you go ahead.
Well, no, I wasn't going to disagree with him.
I was going to take it back to the alma mater.
Yes, we will go back to the alma mater. One second. When you talk to people in the collective world, nobody's boosters like NIL. Nobody's boosters like the aspect of spending money, particularly on the high school kids, yada, yada, particularly before they go into school. We talked about some of the NIL, the real NIL money dynamics on last week's show. But when you have these conversations, the one school who's boot of this station of the sport, who everybody says, yeah, he's good with NIL, is Phil Knight and Oregon. That's the one that people are like, oh yeah, he's like, he's cool with it. It is what it is. So I think Oregon is one of the schools that like pretty nakedly is fine playing this game. Because if you're Phil Knight, you've been giving this kind of money to 17-year-olds for a long, long time.
Yeah, dude.
A long, long time.
Yeah, I mean.
And I'm sure.
We may look back and. I was going to say, we may look back in 30 years and figure out that Oregon was the blueprint before they even knew it. Mm. With just Nike as sort of the governing body of it, if you will, in terms of the style and the brand. No, I'm serious. Richard, I sat in and I was the only media allowed and it was all off the record on a national signing day at Oregon. It started at 3:30 in the morning Pacific time because they get all the LOIs from the East Coast. Phil Knight's right there.
Yeah.
Like in the, it was like Willie, Mario, oh my God, the defensive coordinator used to be the head coach, Jim Levitt, and like Phil Knight, and then all the assistants running around and stuff. Like they've, think about it, guys. Like they, all of the NIL, like impression based stuff of like, this kid's going to represent this brand that's connected to our university. Like that was Nike in Oregon 20 years before we thought NIL was going to be a thing.
The other thing that Alex did not mention about Oregon's portal class is it now includes also Dante Moore. So everybody that I've talked to about Dante is he's very developmental. Like everybody that I talked to in the immediate portal wave and portal tidal wave was like, somebody's going to take Dante Moore and then another transfer quarterback. So Moore comes in, Moore sits behind whoever it is. And you see, so I think Oregon playing it that way, rolling with Dylan Gabriel next year, probably. And then you've got Dante Moore also in the pipeline is something that should be noted about how Oregon's skinning the cat there. All right. To Gainesville, the place where I am in right now. I mentioned their signing class last week and how much they needed to get this thing over the line. Like I said earlier in the show, I do tend to think that Lagway gets over the line. If you don't have a quarterback in your high school signing class, you don't really have a signing class, in my opinion. So in that respect, Florida's probably good. Florida's class is no longer top three to top five, I don't think. Florida hasn't really portaled that heavy. They don't really portal that heavy. They did get a corner from Oregon and a defensive lineman from Penn and a couple other players. But they just had a five-star flip to Texas, which... It's a five-star recruit that you'd love to have, obviously, but there's some notion about...
Go on.
There's some notion about, is he really a five-star? What's going to happen to him when he shows up at Texas?
Well, Richard, I'd be concerned. You know why I'd be concerned about that player leaving?
Why?
Well... Someone asked him, I think it was one of the recruiting sites asked him, why'd you go? And he said, God told me to. Billy Napier, taken incoming from all over. It's not just podcasters, it's baby. Tough. It's the almighty.
Yeah.
It's tough right now.
Alex, there's not a lot of times where I see your Twitter feed and I was like, I wish you'd have saved that for the show. But I saw that one and I thought, fuck, We could have done the show opener with that.
Yeah,
recycling.
If Billy's recruit,
New Testament God.
If Billy's got to go up against the big man, I agree. I do not really love his chances. But Xavier Filsomi flips to Texas. That was like the worst kept secret in all of recruiting. And then he did, as far as five stars go. LJ McCray, who's a defensive lineman from Florida, who I mentioned last week, decent chance he flips to Auburn. And then there's DJ Lagway, the quarterback. So as far as five stars go, that's where Florida ends up. If you get Lagway, people will be fine. People are not going to be thrilled with a five-star flipping. It's not awesome. It's not awesome when two flip.
No.
But I think people will, in broad strokes, be fine if they get Lagway in the class. And you have a top 10 class. You wanted a top 5 class or a top 3 class, which is how it looked a couple months ago. And it just didn't end up like that. So I'm just curious, as far as what Billy says and what Billy projects about this class and this roster heading into next year, and it's going to start today at his signing day press conference. I'm going, like, the thing that Florida has been saying is that this is the youngest defensive roster in college football. They've been saying that the whole year. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if they're still going to be the youngest next year, but what tune you switching? What marketing copy are you heading into? Are you pivoting towards now that you've got a class of reinforcements that, at least on their face, are going to give you something?
I have a quick question, because you are as close to a Florida man as we get on this show. When you think back to the way it used to be with recruiting rankings and how that was message board fodder for months in advance and months after, and almost sort of its own sort of second metric. Like, we were 20th in the polls at the end of the season, but we have the 14th recruiting class, right? That, when I think about that era, I think about the state of Florida. That's where it really started. Like, when recruiting ranking and the idea of composites and metrics towards personnel acquisition of 17-year-olds, when all of that became an industry, Florida was bigger and better than Texas, in my
the
opinion.
State, I mean,
this, in at least in terms of the focus. The yes, sorry. I need to keep saying this, the state up. Although the Gators were, you know, right, sure, right among those. You can probably tell where I'm going with this. Back at my alma mater, there is, of course, although it is lessening, a perpetual anxiety about, well, like, if Lane's taking Ole Miss to uncharted water, surely some other school's going to get him. Surely some other school's going to get him. And of course, the next one is like, oh, you know, when Florida hires Kiffin next year. I have it's just a question. Could you just, it doesn't matter how you win the games. If you're an 11-win Florida team or a 10-win Florida team under Lane Kiffin and you're going to the playoff, but you're not Georgia, you're not Kirby Smart, you're not the machine. Is that tolerable in a state where high school recruiting, it's like, if you live in Vegas and you walk down the street and you get a cup of coffee, your barista knows like what the line in the Tigers Phillies game is because it's imbued into the culture. I had a question on the single wing this week about like 7 different country artists, 2 of which I actually listened to, maybe like Sturgill and Tyler Childers. But I knew the names because I live here, because like, it's just part of the city I live in. It's like, and I feel like when you live in Florida, and I don't care if you're in Gainesville or Tally, but like if you live in Lake City or Ocala or just one of these random towns,
shout
like
out Lake City,
dude, right? There's, or Largo.
Like,
sounds like
somebody
just
covered Laramie Tunsil's recruitment.
Oy vey. There's just a higher knowledge base. So I guess what I'm trying in a long-winded way is ask you is like, could you be like a portal king and be successful at a Florida school? Or do you still have to be a top 10 guy on these signing days, national high school signing days, if you want to be at Miami or FSU or UCF or UF? I hope I didn't leave anyone. USF, shout out, whatever.
I think the gentleman in Tallahassee would tell you that you can get it done.
It's a good point.
The other proof of that, Stephen, I think, though Richard makes the best proof with Mike Norvell right now at FSU, is that Georgia, like, if this is less portal versus prep, but it's more national versus local. Like, I saw this was well covered the other day. I hadn't even realized the extent of these numbers in The Athletic, that Georgia is currently recruiting not even half Georgia players, which I think we might have known But that this year, that's crazy. Georgia might not pull a single top 10 player from in the state of Georgia this year.
This is what happens. You do get to a station. This happened with Alabama. It's happening with Georgia. This happened with Ohio State. You do get to a station where you can just, dude, Jeremiah Smith is from South Florida, and he is a transcendent receiving prospect. Not maybe not as transcendent as number 18, but in Columbus, as far as people are telling you, he's in that station. I mean, this kid can really play. And they just went and got, they went and it looks like for now that they are going to get him. He has done some flirtation, particularly. No,
and Ohio State does this. Ohio State does this.
But yes, you get to a point.
They did this for everyone. Yeah.
You get to a point.
So is Georgia. So wait, sorry, go ahead, Richard.
You get to a point where if you're Georgia, like, you just go wherever the hell you want. And like,
So, you answered my question. So we're Ohio Stating here. Are we evolving and saying
you won two national championships? You're fucking Georgia.
But this is what the greats do.
Yeah, but the state of Georgia is going to be better stocked on the aggregate raw talent than the state of Ohio.
Close. I would agree. It's a different type of prospect. Georgia, I think, has passed it a little bit. But I think this is what the greats do.
Polish linebackers.
Yeah, this is what the greats do, and this is what Kirby Smart, I think, is good at. And this is what, I don't know, Lincoln Riley might not be as good at, or what, to give a very obvious example, like Jake Spavital at Texas State wasn't good at. The greats can go and recruit nationally and barely recruit the high schools in their states and still make all the high school coaches think that they love them and that they care about them and that they're interested in what's happening in their state. The greats will do both.
Here's the other thing, and I literally don't know this to be true. Besides the player who I know you'd love want to talk about, and we will talk about in a second, I don't know if it's like a down year in the state compare. It could very well not be, and Georgia's just not getting guys. I say that to say, like, it could be some of that. Again, I don't know that to be true or false or whatever. I'm saying that could be part
of it. They all signed with Tech. They all signed with Tech.
Yes, they all signed with Tech. But the one player who I do think we should talk about that Georgia missed out on is Dylan Raiola, who has flipped to Nebraska. Dylan Raiola's dad is on staff at Nebraska. He was committed to Ohio State for a little bit, committed to Georgia.
I want to correct this because I mixed this up last week, and I do need to apologize to the D. Raiolas because there are so many of them. Dominic is his dad. Donovan, his uncle, is on staff, line coach. I got that mixed up last week. My apologies to the Raiolas. It's easy because there's a lot of D. Raiolas here. They're the new Jay Daniels in college football right now. But yes, you are right.
Sounds like a Go first ahead, communion in North Jersey.
Yes, so Raiola's flip was something Nebraska needed more than it hurts Georgia. Is that fair to say?
100%. Yes. Georgia dropped all the way from the number one recruiting class. And they tumbled all the way down to the number one recruiting class.
Whatever will Kirby do? And note that Georgia is at a place where Clemson was pretty recently, which is absolutely no portal players and yet still competing for national championships. Thusly. And then they're also, it's funny because they're also at a place where Alabama was/is, which is like they have the number one punter in the country. The number one punter recruit in the country is coming in too. So it's just like embarrassment. But yes, Georgia, they still have, there's a quarterback in this class. I think he's a 4-star. It's Georgia. We know it's Georgia. All right. We got it. But like the quarterback is from Connecticut, right? The quarterback's not from Buford, Georgia, like Dylan Raiola is. Granted,
he relocated, but yeah.
Dylan Raiola's ties to Nebraska are well taken. And I think for Matt Rhule, especially when Matt Rhule says what he says about, you know, a portal quarterback costing 1.5 or 2, it's interesting that they were able to get this done. And it's also interesting given what I think Alex has talked about a lot on the show, which is Nebraska specifically being a place where you can actually pass the hat around to the rank and file in addition to going to your big swinging donors. I was talking to I was talking to somebody in the NIL world last night, and he was like, yeah, one of our problems was we didn't really rank and file too much. We kept going to our big swinging boosters. And like, that's in some ways easier, but when you're not winning, it's not so easy to get a big check from a big swinger, especially when, as I talked about with Oregon a few minutes ago, big swingers across the country don't really like playing in this space. Now, if you're going to get, and I hesitate to say return on investment because it's not really a return on investment, but if I'm paying and we're winning, I'm probably liable to keep paying. It's probably easier to convince me to keep paying to a high degree.
But you don't get your name on a quarterback recruit. You get your name on a locker room.
Not yet.
Oh no.
Not yet.
Wow. Yeah, you're the kick.
Go look up what Michigan. Come on. Go look up what Jim Harbaugh's actual title is on Michigan's website.
Oh, you mean it's like the J Ira and something thing. Something right. Yeah.
It's the Stanford thing.
Yeah.
They love it when I say it's the Stanford thing.
I agree. I think it's the differences in fundraising between collective ops and athletic department ops and how they interact. It probably is an off-season show that we could do in a lot of detail. But Richard, I think everything that you point out about Nebraska's specific factors in getting Dylan Raiola and how he has these family ties and how they can pass the hat around for the collective is critical to remember here. There will be a pull, a natural pull. I've seen remnants of this cropping up over the last few days to treat Dylan Raiola to Nebraska as the little guys getting a shot again. And obviously Nebraska's not that little a guy.
The little guy.
but as, you know, a possible moment of a little bit more parity being injected back into the sport. And definitely not. Like, I think that's foolish. There's no reason to think that is going to happen. This is a guy whose blood is the Nebraska shade of red specifically, who wanted to go and be the savior at Nebraska. And that's great. I'm happy that it happened. He could be that dude who gets Nebraska. If he's not the guy who gets him back to a bowl game, then it's simply time to start over. Knock down Memorial Stadium, build something new. If that doesn't happen,
you mean really start over, like Comet hits the Earth way.
Oh, but Godfrey. He could be that dude. And it's cool that he is a Nebraska Cornhusker, and just as its own thing, as him being a Nebraska quarterback, I'm thrilled that this happened. I'm excited to watch it.
Godfrey, the player who you referenced was asleep this morning has tweeted, "I'm up," about 15 minutes ago. Ryan Wingo.
Fuck yeah, by dude.
The way. Ryan Wingo.
Get a cup of coffee.
He's from St. Louis.
Get your Starbies. Get your Starbies and a bottle of water. Get a stretch in. Breakfast is very important. To Alex's point, and to hopefully put a pin on this, nothing that is introduced and approved, nothing. And I know we're about to move on to the tasting menu. NIL, portal, 12-team playoff, all the things that we can't stop talking about, is designed to help the little guy, okay? Everything we've discussed today and all the uncertainty around it will be adopted, refined, like synthesized and processed and created into an advantage by the powers. Okay. Nothing. I'm not saying you can't have a better lot in life in a 12-team playoff if you're a G5. We've talked about that. But nothing exists for the little guy in this sport. It's just, it will always be for the rich to get richer. If you can break that system, interrupt it, or somehow kind of join it in progress, well, bully for you. That's kind of the American dream. But none of this exists to help little guys.
The best recruiting class of a G5 team, and I am scrolling, fellas. Ooh, baby! Tulsa?
Might be TSA.
At 62?
What? What?
Again, fluid, no. Because it's...
You just skipped one. You just skipped
one. No, UCF's in the Big 12.
No.
Richard, do you mean Tulane? You're misreading. You're seeing a suh where it's an ain. That's got to be what's happening.
This is some good ass live radio right here.
No, I am.
Are we all fact check? Are we both fact checking Richard right now?
I am scrolling.
I'm going to 247. Shout out, bud.
You guys do it too. Scrolling on down. Again, this is probably going to change because
this is not real.
It's 11 Eastern on Wednesday morning. Again, guys are going to flip. Guys are going to move. This will probably change. But no, fellas, some scrolling had to be done there. Cincinnati's in the Big 12. USF at 56.
Right. USF is at 47.
All right. You see, now we're going to be doing bad audio because we're looking at different rankings, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, Alex Golish has done a nice job at USF. We're actually going to talk about them in the tasting.
Go Bulls!
Tell us some quick and exciting announcements.
Let's clean house.
Yeah, let's clean some house. Split Zone Duo live in Houston. It's brought to you by our dear partners at Home Field Apparel. The promo code, of course, at homefieldapparel.com. If you just want to buy shirts, buy joggers, buy crew necks, buy sweatshirts, whatever, is SCD20 at homefieldapparel.com for 20% off your first order. But you can also meet Home Field in person. A lot of the Home Field team, Connor, Josh, and crew are going to be with us at Rockefeller's in Houston on January 6th in the evening. Go to splitzoneduolive.com. That's splitzoneduolive.com. Get your tickets now. And you can join us for what is going to be the biggest show that we have done yet in the still brief but growing history of Split Zone Duo live shows. We are thrilled to be joined by them. We're also going to hang out with our partners at Nokian Tires at that event and have a lot of fun things for people to do in addition to catching the live podcast. So there will be guests. There will be hanging out at the bar. There will be socializing. There will be a celebration. A celebration of the season. You just confirmed a guest.
Like 20 minutes before we went on. I'm about to leave town for the holidays, hence the backwards hat and just the even more sleepless than usual face. But I was getting oil changed, about to leave town, got a confirmation. Gonna be an interesting guest. We got one.
D'Amico Ryan.
They're in the boat. They're in.
Come on down.
They're all elite. They're all elite. That would be sweet, dude.
That's not the guest.
The YouTube audience can see that Steven has been cuffing his microphone inside his hands there for the weird sound. But those of you not watching on YouTube probably wondering, why does it sound like that?
Don't break the illusion.
It's true. I did
or
just
watch
break
YouTube,
the illusion.
I guess.
SplitZoneDuoLive.com for your tickets. And if you just go to SplitZoneDuo.com, you can subscribe to our Substack, get premium episodes, premium newsletters, live chat opportunities, and much, much more, including a live chat that we're actually going to be doing yet to be announced, but I guess I'm announcing it now. Just stay tuned on December 28th with some other folks on Substack, football publications. We're going to talk about college football playoff and about other things, other important matters of state on Substack, splitsonduolive.com. Also, Thursday morning, Godfrey answered 103 questions to accompany you on your holiday travels. Richard is going to have his standard schematic preview of the college football playoff with a great guest this year who has not been on the program yet, who I'm very excited about. So it is a tremendous time to join up at splitsonduo.com/subscribe. Get a month free if you sign up annually.
Trying to figure out what the most dad moment was, where it was about 43 of the top 50 Pitchfork albums I ran through real fast where I didn't even know who the artist was, or a long discussion on alcoholism, watching out for alcoholism in your 40s. There's a lot of dad energy on that bad boy. So
I like it when you do these shows that are like half football, half just other affairs. I think they're good.
I literally just, like, as you know, Alex, because you were helping me do it yesterday, like we flipped it on. We got 103 questions in about 18 minutes and we flipped it off. And then whatever was asked, I just went with it. So
a true AMA. Yeah, that's respect.
Hey, Alex. Yeah. There's also like 7 questions about Troy's new head coach. So it's still very SCD.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing your analysis of the Gerard Parker hire at Troy. It's an interesting one to me. It's not Chip
Lindsley. That's it. There's the spoiler. It's not Chip Lindsley.
Also, follow us on socials. We are at Split Zone Duo on just about every platform that you could imagine, including, this is a funny story. Do you guys remember like a year ago or so when I said that we couldn't get the Split Zone Duo TikTok handle? Like, yeah, I was like beside myself. I was like, who squatted this handle?
Why was that?
China.
Well,
China.
I was confused about what had happened. I said on the show, I think I said, email us at podcast@splitzoneduo.com with the subject extortion in the line or blackmail or something, and we can work out a deal for the handle. Didn't get any emails, but I did. I was explaining the situation to some of my best friends from Pittsburgh when they were out visiting me a couple of months ago. And, you know, it was a celebratory weekend. We had been celebrating an occasion, and there had been some alcohol flowing. And you know, it was kind of getting into the later part of the night. And one of my friends, we'll call him the king in this, because I had to give him 10% of our business in order to get the handle. He actually owns a significant part of our company now. But he said, oh, yeah, like a couple years ago when we were at the lake, I just squatted that handle you know, to be funny. So
I didn't know about. Wait, oh, you didn't know about this? I've heard this.
Yeah, that's how we got Splitzone Duo on TikTok. Yeah.
Who's this little dickhead?
Well, anyway, he's now your business partner.
He's now your 30% of Splitzone Duo LLC. Man, your man has a minority stake.
So he transferred the handle to us. So I was blackmailed. You know, respect the king, I suppose. I have to pay my 10%. We can decide who owes that. If it's you know, all 10 for me or 3.33 from each of us. But we are now on TikTok at Splitzone Duo. That's the lesson here. So if you did want to squat our handle, sorry, the blackmail opportunity has been taken by somebody else.
You can
still
do it on Blue Sky or whatever the fuck is next.
I squatted that one. I was careful. Okay. I squatted that one. Yeah, but no, it's good. I mean, we love TikTok.
Are we active on Blue Sky?
No, we are not. But we are on TikTok, where, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about how if you go on TikTok, your worldview is going to be like shaped by the party in mainland China. And I think that if you do go to TikTok, you might have your worldview shaped. I haven't talked to President Xi about it, but I think that he might be feeding Splitzone Duo into the hearts and minds of American youth to try to give them a certain perspective on college football.
I will not stop you.
Richard, what time is it? What are we doing?
It is time, as we will all do when we sit down for Christmas dinner here in a few days, to taste it.
That wasn't too bad.
No, again, see, it's
not bad at all.
You can't taste what we're tasting here moving forward is, you know, mileage may vary.
Well, Richard, we're going to find the fun. I'll tell you that much. So on Saturday, there are some college-like NFL games. One of them might literally have Mason Rudolph against Jake Browning as the quarterback matchup. Like, shout out 2016, what a time that was in society, or even 2017.
Richard, keep telling me about that elite play again in the pros that you would prefer over G5 football.
What do you want me to do? The Jets are playing Zach Wilson. Alex, how are we feeling about the old steel curtain?
We're at the point where we're hoping that it's a lose out situation so the changes can finally be made.
Hold on a second. So the changes can finally be made. Which change are we talking about there? In the Steel
City? I think Mike needs to have one more year because I think he is one of the best coaches in the history of the league. But also, like, at some point, everything expires. It stops working. The Eagles fired Andy Reid, and nobody regrets it. Yes, he's won two Super Bowls since then, but it worked out for him. It worked out for them. We need some significant changes. Also, I'm very concerned that we got a lot of Georgia listeners. It seems like Mike Tomlin, who is elite at reaching his players, literally cannot get through to George Pickens,
It's not just George Pickens. George Pickens and Deontay Johnson. Can Both you imagine how much
he hates
Mike
them?
Tomlin cannot stand that receiver room? Dude,
it's bad. It's bad. Also, like, this was after, remember, the Steelers had Chase Claypool a few years ago, who you texted me one time. It's like, I bet Tomlin wants to throw this guy off a mountain, was I think what you said. The Steelers just have a very hard time getting normal wide receivers. But anyway, on the college football front, I am dubbing the NFL's Chargers-Bills game this Saturday, I think it is, the Craig Bowl. Because it's Easton Stick, who Craig Bowl recruited to North Dakota State. Now, granted, I did check this. I did a fact check. Bowl was gone to Wyoming in Stick's first year, but he was the recruiting head coach when Stick was coming to North Dakota State against Josh Allen, who obviously Craig Bowl coached at Wyoming back when Josh Allen was not yet Josh Allen. So that's a very collegey set of NFL games, including the
committed.
Is it the Craig Bowl Bowl or just the Craig Bowl? What are we calling that game?
I think we should just call it the Craig Bowl. By the way, best quarterback in Wyoming history. Well, I guess still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, or at least he's upright at the moment. Only committed to Wyoming because Fresno State would not give him the time of day. Could you imagine?
It's a funny business. It's a funny business. In the explicit college football realm, Thursday, 7 Central ESPN, USF against Syracuse in the Boca Bowl. I'm going to include the vested interests here because that'll give you a sense of what the consensus is with a lot of opt-outs in these bowls. Cuse is -2.5 in this game. Garrett Schrader is hurt for Syracuse. So it's an interim coach team missing a bunch of defensive depth guys, like not stars, but guys who do play. Against a USF team that is pretty well intact and hasn't been in a bowl since 2018, is in the first year under a new coach, and is exactly the team that should be excited, amped up, ready to play. I love a little bowl psychology, a little bowl psychoanalysis, kind of like USF on the money line here. Just feels a little bit more meaningful to them right now, a little bit less chaotic, doesn't it?
Dude, I do not touch bowl lines with a 39 and a half foot pole, except for the
generally good practice. Generally good practice, I would say. But I like that psychoanalysis I just did. I could see USF really being also, it's sort of a home bowl. I mean, hey, I mean, USF is totally in South Florida. So it has to be what? I assume USF's what, 5 minutes from Boca? After all, it's the University of South Florida.
Yeah, right on South Beach.
It's got to be right there.
Right on South Beach.
Zing.
Friday, 5:30 Central, ESPN. Georgia Tech against UCF. UCF is -4.5 in the Gasparilla.
Georgia O'Leary Bowl.
It is. Wow. Very good point.
And, hey, Georgia O'Leary, sort of, not connected. I was about to say connected to both coaching staffs. No, not connected to Gus. Sorry, I overreached. He coached at UCF and then Georgia Tech.
Both of these teams, mostly intact.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. I was going to say something that's not true. Yeah. Please continue.
Oh, love that. Good running back, good ground game matchup here, and also two teams that just cannot stop the run at all. So if you are soothed by running backs pounding into the line 40 to 60 times a game and just getting whatever they want.
It's a good napper.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
It's a good napper.
RJ Harvey for UCF, good runner. Jamal Haynes and Haynes King, the Haynes's, both very effective for Georgia Tech on the ground. So you like rushing yards, you're going to like this one. That would be my prediction. Saturday, early slate. What we're doing here, by the way, it's a true tasting menu. We're giving you one per time slot that we think, all right, is like the creme de la creme of the weekend of bowl watching here. Troy, 7.5-point favorites against Duke in the Bowl. Birmingham, that's Pittsburgh's sister city.
You got the wrong number on this one, boss. This is what's find me the total on this one, and I will consider.
You mean low? Low.
Firing on the low end. Godfrey, do you know who Duke's interim head coach is? Oh, you don't.
Wasn't it Trooper Taylor? But not. Is it not? Are they on their second interim coach?
Is it Trooper?
It either is or was at one point in time. On Trooper Taylor.
Was it Trooper?
Yes. Yes.
Did y'all know Trooper was trying to get G5 head coaching jobs this year?
Trooper Taylor, whose work you may be familiar with regarding Cameron Newton.
Towels in the air, baby.
44.5 is the total in this game. That sounds high to me. I think
you're very gambly today about these.
You got to find something here.
The reason I've mentioned spreads, by the way, on these games, like I said, it's. I generally do not advise bowl betting, and I'm certainly not, but I'm just trying to give you a sense of what the people who are putting their money into these games think, like what the don't work because there's so many opt-outs.
This is the thing.
Everyone listening is going to have to endure some sort of thing they don't want to during the holidays. These games will be on in the background, and that's what they're for.
But I do think the power of the spread, and it's difficult here, but the power of the spread is the projection of a sport that lacks parity, and the projection of when you get into this part of this season, especially the unpredictability of who's playing. Like I think you mentioned Bud Elliott earlier in the show. Like Bud, I think tweeted that like he did all this research and had a good beat on it, and then he saw like an IG live of one of the teams in a bowl game, like in a casino, and he was like, "Well, at like 4 a.m, he was like, well, I'm not betting on them." So you know, it's bowl season, man. Weird stuff happens.
Bud is amazing / craven with his gambling systems. This is my favorite. It's my favorite Budism is the constantly having some sort of like theory on.
Look, man, if they're gonna make you a market, humans been doing market behavior for as long as there have been markets. That's all we're saying right now.
Hey, quick endorsement for having children. This is a fresh cup of coffee that a 9-year-old who's not in school right now just brought me.
The reason that Troy, I think, is better than a 7.5-point favorite.
Trash too.
Or better than a touchdown favorite. Both of these teams are interim coached, obviously, with John Summerall to Tulane. But I think that Duke is just heavily, heavily, heavily portaled, not just Riley Leonard. And so I think that if you want to watch a Sun Belt defense put an ACC offense into a blender, this will be an ample, ample chance to watch that. Saturday, middle slate, James Madison, 2.5 favorites against Air Force.
There are times when
Richard,
we endorse our work on this show and we say, go read XYZ that we wrote at XYZ. Every year, apparently.
Yeah.
I do this thing that's basically like one player to watch in each bowl game. And fellas, I do not endorse that article, because that article becomes almost fiction by the time these games are actually played because of bowl opt-outs, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, I basically cut it off. I write it and I post it before.
You just stopped doing it?
No, we did it, but I write it and I post it before the first bowl games go. And like, for instance, Alex mentions Duke having a lot of opt-outs. Duke was one of the hardest teams to figure out a player worth a damn to put on and tell people to watch. And then it all gets rendered moot because there are late opt-outs in the cycle. Like Florida State's just had their opt-out cycles began after I posted the damn story. It is what it is.
In that middle slate, Armed Forces Bowl, James Madison just inside a field goal favorite against Air Force. Speaking of players with uncertain status, Jordan McLeod, the quarterback for James Madison, is in the portal or has entered the portal, but is also listed atop the depth chart for James Madison in this game. This sometimes happens. I think this happened at Florida.
Keep your options open.
Maybe. It's James Madison as a new coach, Bob Chesney from Holy Cross. By the way, Richard, congrats. You picked Bob Chesney before the year in our preseason predictions time capsule show as the coach to get a job this year. And he did.
So did I.
Okay. Congrats. Richard some credit.
That's right.
We heard the same thing from the same source. Right.
I remember that Richard said it.
Let's not get too funny.
Hold
on. Speaking of endorsing work, I wrote about Bob Chesney in Sports Illustrated, I believe 2 years ago. The receipts are in there. Go find it. The tie goes to the runner.
So I think Jordan McLeod's going to play. He's a fun quarterback. Air Force, Air Force really interests me. Obviously, the service academies do not have the typical opt-out thing going. And so like their team is pretty intact. But Air Force down the stretch
a good November.
Was one of the most depressing. I mean, I think it was four in a row to close the year. A couple of them given away by turnovers and fumbles, and a couple just getting overmatched. And
Alex, it was the six against Army, and it was like they never recovered. They started getting physically beaten after that. I mean, this was the team that we had pegged to be where Liberty is now against Oregon in the Fiesta, and they are a shell of what they were September, most of October. They had a bad backstretch.
Saturday night in Vegas, Utah -6.5 against Northwestern. Utah has so many people in the portal, including Bryson Barnes. And I really can't believe I'm saying this, but I think I might like Northwestern here. Solid team, pretty much still together. Won seven games. I will never get over it that this Northwestern team won seven games. Like,
makes zero sense.
Put aside Pat Fitzgerald lighting his legacy on fire and being fired right before the year, put aside the difficulty of the Big Ten schedule and everything else about the context around Northwestern season.
Yeah.
This team that we watched in 2022 was so, so, so bad. Like, the best coaching job in the country this year was David Braun, period.
What if, Alex, we talk about Narduzzi and his, like, palpable hatred of offense. We talk about the Iowa memery. What if it was Fitzy? I want to kind of stretch my legs on this in the offseason. Like, we actually sit down and talk about this because no one paid attention to Northwestern. And I guarantee you, if I found 20 college football fans in college football gear on the streets of Nashville today, and I said, what was Northwestern's record? They wouldn't know it. Like, this is the most under the radar winning season of the year in all of college football. What if Fitzy was the problem?
I think that's a reasonable question to ask.
I had him to go like 4-8 with Fitzgerald before the season. So before the, you know,
I didn't have
but
4-8.
To Alex's point, because like Alex does it in a more diplomatic, professional way. This was a sucking ass program for the previous 2 years. Unless they played Nebraska.
Yeah. 2021 and 2022, they were awful. They were a COVID year phenomenon, of course, which prompted another big Fitzgerald expansion. It's a Freudian slip there.
So was A&M. So was Indiana. What are we starting to learn about 2020, guys?
Maybe fake. Not the best year to make decisions based off of.
Fake.
So was Michigan in a different way.
Paid.
Yeah. So paid. Richard, that game, Utah Northwestern, is going to be a blocking and tackling is the key to football sort of thing. Not going to be a ton of explosive spread offense in this game would be.
No, we're going to be real
fun. Like, Northwestern has a good defense, and the fact that their offense moves the ball well despite having a bad quarterback and a bad running game, it doesn't – there's just something there with Northwestern. Really well-coached team. Saturday late, Coastal Carolina, San Jose State, minus 10.5 in Hawaii. Let me give you a couple exciting things about this one. Chevin Cordero, quarterback for San Jose State, which is a 10.5 favorite in this game. He has been playing college football since 2018. He committed in June of 2017,
Good night. The
same month that the U.S. withdrew from the Paris Climate Agreement and that Theresa May won the election to become prime minister of the U.K. And that the Pittsburgh Penguins beat the Nashville Predators in the Stanley Cup
fuck
final.
Fuck you. Wow. Hey, fuck you.
That was in June of 2017 when he
He does this nice shit all the time. Well, like, he's done. Mr. Fucking nice guy. I had to sit there with him before, like, he was my business partner, and he was just one of the little junior members of the writing team, and they're like, this Kirshner kid's, like, terminally nice. And then he had about four or five drinks in him, and he turned into a yinzer sitting next to me during the Stanley Cup, which for me personally was 6 months after 28-3.
Yeah.
Alex Kirshner, Pittsburgh sports fan. Pittsburgh sports fan, all right? We all know what that means. Anyone listening who's not from Western Pennsylvania, you know what I'm saying there.
So for Chevin Cordero, who now plays for San Jose State, and this is his, he's 24 years old. He's been in college football for a long time. This is his last game, and it's a homecoming because he started at Hawaii, and this is the Hawaii Bowl. It's also cool because Brent Brennan, the coach at San Jose State, is the cousin of the late, great Colt Brennan, the record-setting, bucket-getting quarterback of the Hawaii Warriors back in the day. Brennan actually showed up to his press conference in a Colt jersey. It was very cool. I have nothing cool about Coastal Carolina, whose season was a complete bummer. But San Jose State, sort of a dual-track homecoming with the coach and the quarterback. And that's cool, and I love a bowl with some sentimental value. And Tuesday, before we are on this feed next, because we are going to record, I believe, Thursday next week after Christmas, Kansas is a 12.5-point favorite against UNLV. That, Richard, is going to be a schematically fun
Styles
game.
Clash.
Even though Kansas's offensive coordinator is off to Penn State, I think these are teams that do fun things on offense and that will play the game different styles, but that are both interesting, that are both different, and I look forward to watching them play.
This is the funnest game that we've in the bowl since that we've talked about so far.
Yeah, this is quite the Styles Make Fights here. Kansas's offense, without any kind of like it's like we'll still drop the ball plays. Like it's going to be, there's going to be something there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's going to be something there. And it's,
yeah.
Jason Bean is just fun. I mean, Jason Bean, Kansas quarterback, is a fun player.
UNLV, crazy fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the fun season for them, except for the Mountain West Championship game, which was less fun, but they had a great comeback year.
What bowl is this specifically? Like the literal bowl?
Oh, I guess I didn't write that down. Yeah. I don't know. What is it? What do you think it is? Let's play. What bowl would you think this is?
I couldn't even tell you what state it's in without looking. So
I'll give you a hint.
Is it
I'll give
in
you
Texas?
A hint. I'll give you a hint. It's called the Guaranteed Rate Bowl. Can you tell me where that's played?
No.
Arizona.
No, I can't.
It's Arizona because I just think like weird shoddy mortgage practice, and I think it's dry Florida.
Oh, it's the other year. He's right.
Exactly right. It is the Fiesta Bowl's B game.
Oh, am I right?
Yeah. It is. The Fiesta Bowl.
I swear to God, I didn't look that up.
Yeah, the Fiesta Bowl.
You guys can
puts
see me
together.
On camera.
Last year.
Yeah.
Last year when I was out there for the Fiesta Bowl, I was checking in at the same time some players or some fans from the Guaranteed Rate Bowls. That year's teams were going in, and there was like an opportunity, like we could go, right? If you're, you know, in there for the Fiesta Bowl media, you can go to the Guaranteed Rate Bowl, of course. And I had the flu and did not attend that year's Guaranteed Rate Bowl, so I missed a special.
Oh yeah, yeah, you were sick on the job. I remember.
Yeah,
that.
Dude,
I also
got the flu last week or last year's bowl week, which was horrible.
Hey, you don't know something weird? The last time I got the last time I had the proper flu, like not COVID or any of the modern nonsense. Arizona spring game in Tucson. Thought I was going to die in like a Hampton Inn. Not kidding. It was horrible. All right. Shout out to Arizona.
Something about Phoenix.
What did I call it? Dry Florida with bad, with financial malfeasance. I think that's a pretty accurate summation. Food's good.